Hello and welcome to the Unnamed Automotive Podcast. My name is Sammy Hajjassad, and with me, as always, is my good friend and fellow automotive journalist, Benjamin Hunting. Say hi to the people, Ben.
Greetings, human listeners. Did you know Sammy did 4 excellent takes of that intro because we were having technical difficulties, and he nailed it every time. And the last time he did it, science intervened, and we were able to record it properly.
Yeah. Ben is like me. He is an automotive journalist, but he's also a very good friend. That makes sense. Right, Ben?
Yeah, all journalists are all friends. It's like every deer knows every deer knows every other deer. It's the same kind of thing.
I didn't know that. Is that true?
It is very true. I mean, you'd have to ask a deer to confirm.
And they're so hard to find sometimes.
They're so hard to pin down. Deer don't stick around.
Have a massive little lake forest now next to your house or in your house or outside
your
house.
Yeah, I have a forest in my house. It was inconvenient, but it got the price down.
That is the voice of my friend Benjamin Hunting. He's a fellow automotive journalist. He's also my very good friend, and you can find his work all over the internet. Ben, I heard you have a hard out, so we can't waste any more time on this intro, except for allowing you to plug some of your recent publications.
I have nothing but time, in the immortal words of Vin Diesel, but you can find my work at Inside Hook, at Motor Trend, and at Car and Driver.
And you can find my work at autotrader.ca, driving.ca, and we'll go with Electric Autonomy Canada today. That's the publication I chose to talk about.
The trifecta.
Ben, we've got some cool cars to talk about this week. Well, I think it's kind of cool. You've got this Lexus 3-row that I think a lot of people are curious about.
Sammy, it is not a cool car. It is an important car, I think, but I think it's a real stretch to push it into cool territory.
Now, the car we're talking about is the Lexus TX, which is a crossover rather than an SUV.
Is it though?
I think so.
I would call it a large unibody SUV, like a Traverse or, you know, something of that size. I think it's past crossover town. Like last week we were talking about the Ascent and the Highlander, right?
Yeah.
I think that's like the limits of what you could call a crossover.
Lexus has 3-row vehicles like the LX and maybe the GX. Is the GX 3 rows now?
It has always been 3 rows.
Both of them are always 3 rows?
I only know this because I had to look it up because I didn't believe it either.
That's a 3-row. Okay.
Yeah.
And then the LX, which I'm not sure is like a new car anymore.
The LX has had that traditionally those fold down from the side seats in the back.
Yeah.
That are always in the way of your cargo at all times. Like even if whether they're deployed or not deployed, it's a bad time for loading stuff in the back of an LX.
But I think those vehicles are typically described as being like traditional.
Yeah, those are truck SUVs. Truck-based full body, like it's a coffee or something. It's a full frame SUV. You're right. They did have Lexus.
And Lexus, yeah, used to have the L version of the RX.
The short run, poorly executed RXL is how I prefer to refer to that.
Now, remind me, do you know if the RXLs had an extended wheelbase at all, or they just jammed some seats in the trunk?
I really think they just jammed some seats, but don't quote me on that.
But the TX is a real like 3-row vehicle. It's built from the ground up to be a 3-row vehicle without compromise,
I would characterize the TX as being built from the ground up to be a Toyota Grand Highlander. And that is the real problem with the TX. Now, I know you're laughing, and we all know that platform sharing is the way of the world, but we were just talking about the RXL. The RXL was not a good vehicle, but the RX that it is based on is. And if you think about the Lexus RX, which is the most popular Lexus ever, like by huge margins, it does not have an analog in the Toyota lineup.
No, that's the most interesting part about it, I think.
Yeah, you can't go into Toyota and be like, I will buy the cheaper RX and be happy, because it just doesn't exist. In the same way that for a very long time, Lexus didn't have a RAV4 equivalent. There was this kind of division between the two. And then they eventually got the NX and it kind of filled that gap. But Toyota has never, smartly, I think, has never decided to make an RX of its own in North America. So,
But things are changing.
Well, bringing it back to the TX, and this applies to the model I drove because I drove the base model, the 350. When I say base, I mean base drivetrain because I had a premium trim level. It boosted the price by like, I think $9,000 or $8,000, a whole bunch of doodads and stuff. But there are three versions of the TX out there. There's the base, there's the plug-in hybrid, and then there's the, I think it's the 550H, if I'm not mistaken, which is like a high-performance hybrid max version of the TX.
Okay.
And those two vehicles are considerably more powerful, from what I understand, than what you would get in a Grand Highlander.
Okay, that's handy. So that immediately means something a little bit more than the usual kind of like badge swap for a luxury vehicle. Holy moly, I had a stroke on air.
But sadly, Sammy, those are not the versions that I drove. Drove the 350, which is the same 2.4 liter turbocharged four-cylinder engine that you would get in the Grand Highlander. And it is only 10 more horsepower. I think they tuned it. I don't know if the Grand Highlander requires premium fuel, but the TX does. So it's 275 horsepower and 317 pound-feet of torque, and that's 10 more horses than the Grand Highlander, and that's it. That's the only difference between those two drivetrains.
Okay, so that's a bit bland. That kind of like the excitement about a Lexified Toyota. Oh my goodness, a Lexified Toyota like starts to waver quite a bit when you realize that there are some differences here that are not that grand, right?
And great use of the word grand. The other differences that are not quite so grand, I think, are in the styling. The front end has a genericized kind of Lexus look to it, but the rear is very, very Grand Highlander. And
yeah, looking at it, it's not a good... I don't think it's a great-looking car. I don't know if it looks better in person than it does on photos, but to me...
If you think about it, I mean, what's this going up against, right? It's going up against the Cadillac XT6, the Lincoln Aviator, the Infiniti QX60, these kind of like mid-tier three-row SUVs that Lexus has never really had in their lineup.
Lincoln Aviator is a sharp-looking car.
It is, but the other two are not. They're very average. Like, I'm not saying they look bad, but they're not lookers. They're not the kind of vehicle you buy because of the styling.
And are you saying the class of this vehicle doesn't quite extend to like Mercedes GLS or BMW X7 yet?
Not even.
Or Audi Q7?
No, not at all. It's a $55,000 starting price, which is what, $20,000 less than any of the vehicles you just mentioned?
That's palatable, I think.
Yeah. So they've got decent separation from the top end. And I know at the top end, that's where they want to be competing with the LX. So that makes sense, right?
Okay. Yeah.
But inside the vehicle as well, it's a lot less like a Toyota once you're in the cabin, at least in the front two positions. It borrows a lot from the RX and the NX styling wise. Like, you have all the buttons and switchgear and screens and everything are pretty much pulled from the standard Lexus playbook, which is fine. There's nothing wrong with it. It's just kind of generic luxury. I liked the materials on the dashboard. There's some really nice soft touch fabrics that they use that are almost like a suede, but not quite.
Hey, and that sounds nice. That sounds attractive.
I was into that. But then you get into like the second and third rows, and they're very, very similar to the Grand Highlander, to the point where like I think it's like manual controls for moving the second row around, which is not very luxurious compared to some of the competition, which is powering all of that stuff. Like, if you're at the back and you want to load up the Lexus, I don't think in the base model there's any way to fold the seats ahead of you in a power way. Like, you can fold the third row, but the second row I think you have to manually deal with. So
I want to talk about folding rear seats, because I've been driving a bunch of these three-row crossovers, and there are a number of ways to fold seats, and there's nothing standard.
It's like folding a map, right? It's like you never know the right way. Like, once you've done it once, it doesn't mean you can do it a second time.
I think it's more like putting a sofa bed back together.
There's some three-row SUVs where I don't know whether I'm folding them flat or if I'm tilting them up and pushing them against the front seats.
Yeah.
Or if I'm lifting them out entirely. Like, it's seldom well documented. Like, they try
and
to...
sometimes there's like numbers on like various levers or
like
straps.
Like an IKEA thing or something.
Yes,
or there's like weird pictograms that don't make any sense. Like, the sequence of events just doesn't follow.
I don't understand, because I feel like, you know, a lot of cars have like a little lever on the sides of the trunk that you can just flap, you can like pull, and then a seat will spring down somewhere. But I swear, when I first started in this industry, one of the first cars that left a strong impression on me was the Ford Flex, and it had power folding third row and I think even second row seats that you could activate from the trunk, which I found to be a feature, a rare feature that doesn't exist anymore.
There are some vehicles that do it. I feel like you have to buy a very large truck-based SUV. I think like the Grand Wagoneer and the Denali Yukon. I think that's the class of vehicle now that offers that kind of folding.
That's not fair. That's insane.
Life is very much not fair, Sammy. Especially when you consider that vehicles like that exist at the price point they exist at. That is the ultimate underscoring of what's not fair in this world.
And so, like, what was the car I had a few weeks ago? I think it was the Grand Highlander. No, the Ascent. The Ascent. I want to put my stroller in the back seat, the third row's in the way.
No, this
in
is not order allowed.
For me, in order for me to fold the rear seats, I have to pull some straps that then pull towards me, but then I have to push the seats away from me. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
it's obtuse. It doesn't need to. That's an awful way of doing it.
There are some really bad ones out. Anything that involves straps, I'm not friendly with. Like, I feel like levers are okay because they're unambiguous, but straps, straps can be pulled in multiple directions. And sometimes you don't know, like, sometimes you pull it one way and it folds, and then you pull it a different way and it de-latches, and then you can tilt it up. You know what I'm saying though, right?
Yeah, yeah. But like, the straps make sense because I can't reach to where that seat back is from the back, from the trunk. I have to pull the strap, and that makes sense.
You've lost me. I'm already not buying this vehicle because of this.
When a third row is folded down, I can't reach forward enough to the seat back.
You got to crawl in.
Yeah, no, I don't want to do that.
Yeah, because
so I grab the strap and I pull it from there.
Once you turn 30, your knees betray you and you're no longer allowed to use them for like any kind of locomotion. It's just forget it.
Yes, okay.
One time I was like 31 years old and I was at Long Beach. 31? No, I was probably a little bit older than that. 33. And I was in Long Beach for the Formula E E-Prix, which is what they call their races. And it was the middle of the afternoon in between heats. And I made the mistake of sitting under this tree for like 20 minutes. And I couldn't walk for like 4 days. Just because I was sitting on the ground under a tree. That's the level of betrayal your body brings to you.
I mean, but when you wake up and something hurts, I don't know how you could just sleep wrong, right? Like, that's the problem, I think, in life.
And you know what the crappy thing is about waking up and something hurts? That's the best you're going to feel all day. Like, that moment. It doesn't get better. You have to hope that the next day you don't hurt when you wake up. That's like the Etch-a-Sketch shaking the slate thing to get you back into feeling like a normal human.
Okay, all right.
24 hours.
Let's get back on track. We're talking the TX. We were talking about the cargo space and the folding rear seats.
We were talking about how bland the vehicle is overall. So the engine is, when I first got it, I was not impressed. I actually thought it was kind of bucking on me. It felt unsmooth. The real world is rough. The shifts weren't great. Power delivery off the line was not great. It just did not feel like a luxury experience. And then I ran through a half tank of gas, filled it with premium fuel, and things were suddenly a lot better, which leads me to believe that whoever was driving the vehicle before me cheaped out at the gas pump.
Premium, dude.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that erased a lot of my complaints about it. I also got much better fuel mileage after that happened. And I mean like ridiculously better, like approaching 30 miles per gallon, which I know is impossible in this vehicle. So I don't know what happened on that particular like 75 mile stretch, but...
Why is that unfathomable? Well, I guess the hybrid can get like that much.
Yeah, I think the regular one is rated at like 24 or something like that.
Oof. Let me double check. I was gonna look anyways.
But anyway, just continue.
23,
yeah. So it's unlikely that I actually got that level of fuel mileage. In any case, it just doesn't... It didn't feel like a luxury vehicle. It didn't exactly look like a luxury vehicle. And inside, it had all the features you would want. And it felt Lexus-y for the driver. But it didn't feel like it was worth $15,000 more than a base Grand Highlander. I think the base Grand Highlander is like 40 grand or something like that.
Yeah. I actually found that to be kind of pricey when I think about it. Sometimes.
It is. But the thing is, if you were to like, let's say you want to go feature per feature for like a Grand Highlander and a TX, you want to get them to have similar features. I think it only narrows the gap by like to like $10,000.
To be blunt, a Grand Highlander doesn't start at 40. It starts at 43.
43. Okay. Well, the 55 for the TX.
So it's a 12. That is a hike. I mean, like I said, already seemingly kind of.
Wait, are expensive. You including like destination and whatnot?
No, not yet.
Okay.
With destination 44,700. And that's for a front-wheel drive car. Is yours?
Mine was all-wheel drive, but mine as tested was 62,000.
Oof.
Yeah. It was the premium trim.
Now, hold on. I want to talk to you really, really quickly about the driving experience, because we talked about the RX. You said the RX is one of the most popular cars that Lexus has built ever. And I also think that there's something weird about the RX where it's not just popular with consumers. I actually think it's a pretty good car all around. Like like critics like it too, right?
Sure. As long as you get the one that doesn't try to be something it's not. Like, you don't get the F Sport.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You don't get the 500H or whatever. Those
and
just diminishing returns for those vehicles. I don't really think it's a sporty ride, and I don't think more power makes it better.
Right. And I also think that Lexus has defined has defined itself through the RX, and I think that experience has been successfully transplanted into a smaller vehicle in the NX. And then I'm hoping to hear from you that RX driving experience has been pushed into a larger vehicle with the TX. But no, what I'm hearing currently is that that's not happening. And this is just a Toyota vehicle, a Toyota Grand Highlander that has just been covered in leather.
It is very much a Grand Highlander. And this is unfortunate because I think Lexus really needed something here. I think because the GX and the LX, I mean, at least until recently, I haven't driven the new GX. The redesigned one.
I like the new look.
I don't think it's been competitive for a very long time. Mm-hmm. It's like the forerunner in the sense that they just left it on the vine and they sell like what 200,000 a year or something, or 100,000, however many it is, some crazy number of forerunners. So they don't give it a 6-speed automatic transmission as 5-speed. No one cares. The GX, they did the same thing, but without the sales. So it's been kind of sitting there in the Lexus lineup for a super long time. It's very inefficient. The interior is not great. It's not, the space isn't used well. And they threw all of that out for the new generation, and they're trying to make a fresh start for that vehicle. Mm-hmm. And I kind of feel like the TX had a lot of opportunity to slide into somewhere where people who had outgrown their RX, they had nowhere to go, right? They tried that. They tried to stuff that hole with the RXL, and it was a huge disaster. Mm-hmm. And the TX is not a disaster by any sense of the word, but it's not a good vehicle. It's a perfectly average and fine vehicle. And I think if you buy it and you're going to spend that much money anyway, you won't be disappointed. But I don't think it's any better than any of its rivals, and I don't think it offers anything unique.
So, okay, that's an important summary. I probably shouldn't expand upon that, but I'm going to, because I like to pad the length of our...
Because Sammy likes taking the word summary and turning it upside down.
Yeah, I like to pad the length of our podcast so that people have more minutes to skip through. But it looks like then they took a look at the RXL and expanded upon that vehicle rather than just designing like a good car from the get-go.
I think that they just did kind of a minimum effort reskin of the Grand Highlander.
That's even worse, I suppose. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I don't think the RXL factors into this as anything other than a cautionary tale. Because the RXL...
It seems like they didn't even take heed.
No, but the RXL failed because...
Minimal effort.
The RXL failed because it was tiny inside. The TX is not tiny inside. You could put adults in the third row. They'll be fine for, like, you know, shorter trips. It's going to be okay because the Grand Highlander does everything the TX does just as well as the TX does. Like, if you're looking at base models, there's no advantage. And that's the problem. If we were talking about the plug-in hybrid or the crazy performance hybrid, maybe I would like it more. But I have not had a chance to drive those yet. So I can only speak to the model that most people are going to buy, which is the base model.
Okay. Now, there's one more thing I want to talk about before we switch topics, and that is the term recording. You drove this Lexus, and I believe it had some sort of in-car driver recording feature?
Yeah, so there's a couple things that we need to explore here. The first is there's a driver monitoring system, which is...
That's it.
It's kind of... required for any vehicle that is using like a semi-autonomous or adaptive cruise control system that does any kind of steering, because they don't want you looking away from the road. The first problem with this system is the Lexus One is super aggressive in terms of driver attention. So let's say I'm driving slowly down the road and I'm looking for an address, or I'm looking at a road sign trying to figure out where I'm going. Mm-hmm. It will immediately beep at you and penalize you for doing that. That is super annoying. But as I was trying to figure out how to turn this system off, I was going through various menus, and there's a feature in the Lexus that it records the driver, and it uses the camera that it's doing the driver attention monitor, the same camera feed, which captures not just the driver, but in theory, an area around the driver. So like if someone's sitting behind you in the second row, in theory, they could be caught on this too. If there's an incident in the car that the vehicle determines is like a safety incident or an accident, it will record what you were looking at or what you were doing. Basically, a camera pointed at your head in that moment.
Oh my God. Okay.
You can turn this off, which I immediately did.
Yeah, you're always concerned about people recording.
What is that all about?
Look, I mean, it's bizarre to me, and I want to be, like, we should talk a little bit about Toyota and their privacy policy, I think is the best way to describe it, because they're pretty conservative when it comes to this sort of thing. As far as I remember, one of the major sticking points with them to not adapt Android Auto or Apple CarPlay was that they didn't totally feel comfortable giving user data to Google. That was my understanding back in the day.
I think that the word giving is probably doing a lot of heavy lifting there. If they could sell it, I think they would have been more enthusiastic.
So now we're looking at a car that is covering a whole new, I mean, it's gathering a whole new type of data on its driver, and we should be worried. We should be concerned about that. And they have some information to tell you about when you turn on that feature.
Is that going to your insurance company? Is that going to law enforcement? What's happening with that?
Yeah, what is happening with that? We don't know right now. It's very likely being sold to somebody. We've been hearing a lot of stories about data being sold without your consent. Is that fair? Without your direct consent? Is that the right term?
We were talking earlier this week about a colleague of ours who wrote a story about people who were going to like Jiffy Lube and other quick oil change places. And then their insurance rates were going up because what would happen is a lot of these places mark down the mileage on vehicles when they come in. Mm-hmm. And Jiffy Lube or whatever company was selling that to insurance companies. Insurance companies were noticing that drivers were driving a lot more than they had said they were, or I guess more than the insurance company was comfortable with. And then they were just jacking up rates.
I hate that.
That's like a third party thing you would never even think was happening, but it's happening behind the scenes. And it's like, imagine all the nefarious stuff that's happening with your phone, all the data that it picks up all the time and mm-hmm. sells. Your car is doing that too.
Absolutely. And this is just another data point, perhaps, that can be sold. It's interesting that they're talking about what they're recording. And I understand that having some kind of recording is necessary to...
But not of my face. Maybe not recording. Not of my face. Like, record the road ahead. When there's an accident, I want to see what happened outside the vehicle.
Recognition or...
People don't need to see my accident face. I assure you, it's ugly, gentlemen.
I'm sorry, we couldn't give you the full payout because your face
because
was ridiculous.
your face shattered all our records for ugliness.
So it's interesting to look at and think about these things. I think we're supposed to be getting more used to in cabin cameras or in cabin facial recognition.
We should be surveilled at all times, right? Like that's surveillance capitalism.
In order to activate features like hands-free driving
or heated seats.
He doesn't look that cold.
You know that's where it's going.
Yeah.
What were we going to say?
No, everything is going to that, of course.
The other thing I wanted to complain about when it came to the Lexus user interface, this is not unique to the TX, but it has those buttons on the steering wheel that are touch sensitive and they activate menus that are only visible in the head-up display. And it's stuff like, a lot of it is for the entertainment system, like moving around from one track to the next. But also, the adaptive cruise control system requires you to fiddle around with these really finicky buttons that are projected out over the hood instead of something on the gauge cluster. The problem with this is it sucks. First of all, it's difficult to use, but also it's context sensitive. So if you want, like, let's say on a gauge cluster, you could pop up the adaptive cruise system, go to the setting you want to change, and it will stay there while you're changing it until you're done. For these systems that are in the HUD, if you forget or like you take too long, it disappears from the display and you have to go through the whole thing again to get to where you want it to be. Mm-hmm. Long story short, it's a huge hassle. There's no benefit to it. And I wish it didn't exist.
That does sound like a headache. That is not... Man, user interface...
I mean,
we talk about this every week with a review,
yeah,
right?
Because car companies want to be cute, they want to be different, and they don't care about actual functionality. They straight up do not care about functionality. Mm. I'm comfortable saying that. I refuse to believe that the driver is the focal point when these systems are designed.
And what, the features and design is?
Yeah, it's all about G-Wiz stuff. It's all about impressing people or impressing someone on the board or impressing your boss in the design studio.
We're not just talking about BMW and their air console and in-cabin selfie camera.
Every single vehicle on the market today, there is an element of this, if not the overriding element.
Interesting. I'm trying to think of the best in-cabin systems that I can think of. And I'm struggling a little bit.
Some of the BMW stuff is okay. I think some of the Hyundai stuff is okay. I think that they do a decent balance between buttons and on-screen things.
But Ford, Honda, those guys?
I haven't been in a Ford in a while. The last Ford I was in for a long period of time was like a base model F-250. And so that was like the bare bones of what you need out of a system, which was fine with me. It worked. I could access all of that stuff. It worked fine.
Right.
It wasn't trying to impress me.
Interesting. Okay. Anything else you want to talk about with this TX? You're not recommending this, essentially. You're telling somebody to, even though this class of luxury three rows under, let's say, 60 grand, six, 70 grand, under 70 grand, is kind of like, a desert of decent cars. Like,
I think that the answer to all of what you just said is buy a high spec Grand Highlander.
Okay.
If you really want this and you want it to be a Toyota, then that's a good option for you. I think it's a better option than the TX. I'm not saying the TX is bad. I'm just saying it's not something that's compelling. At least the base model is not compelling.
I'm on Team Aviator. I'm on Team Aviator. I think that's my go-to in this kind of non-German, non-European luxury vehicle segment.
It's been a long time since I've been in an Aviator.
But they had, first of all, they have the harmonic chimes, which is great.
The performance hybrid model doesn't exist anymore, though.
Well, then I'm off. I'm out.
I understand, the plug-in is gone, so.
I'm sorry, Dragons, I'm out. okay, what else are we talking about this week? You have done some really cool deep dive into a really neat story that you caught me off guard with, which was about fake HD trucks, right?
That's right. I didn't know this, but for about almost 50 years, Detroit, and not just Detroit, but Japan, which we'll get to in a second, has been building heavy-duty pickups that are not actually heavy-duty pickups. And there's a couple of reasons why this happened, and it depends on which era you're looking at. But the original reason, Sammy, back in the 70s, there was a whole bunch of new pollution laws that came to pass. Like the EPA was created, vehicle emissions suddenly became a thing, we had all the smog equipment, et cetera, et cetera. So as the 70s kind of moved forward, by the middle of that decade, pretty much every V8 was choked down to like 150 horsepower. Things were kind of grim. And car companies were trying to find any way they could to get around this. This leads to two developments from American pickup truck companies, one of which is kind of an oddball and the other which is actually very important. And the first, the oddball one, was GM decided to build this vehicle called the Big Ten, which was the Chevrolet version, or the Heavy Half for the GMC version. And that referred to, the Heavy Half was the Heavy Half Ton, and the Big Ten was the C10, but bigger, I guess.
Okay.
It was an options code, RPO code F44. And what it would do was it would install more springs and different load rated tires to increase the gross vehicle rating of the half ton pickup to just over 6,000 pounds.
Okay, so like 6,600, I think.
No, not that far.
No?
6,050 in one case.
Oh, that's it?
And there were two options. One was 6,050, and the other was 6,200. There were two variations of F44.
How interesting.
So why would you do this, Sammy?
Well, you mentioned you want to sell some kind of capability to your consumers, like hauling, towing and hauling?
Well, that's what GM told people the reason was, right? They were like,
see, I'm so smart. I'm a sucker for the marketing.
You're right on board with them. You're like, yeah, I'm into this.
Perfect.
So they were, because like I think the lowest gross vehicle weight rating for a pickup truck from GM in that year was like 4,900 pounds. So it's a 2,000 pound increase, which means, yeah, you can haul more stuff. You can tow a little bit more stuff. But behind the scenes, the real reason was, if you had a vehicle on the market that was above 6,000 pounds gross vehicle rating, you did not have to comply with EPA regulations for emissions.
That's it. Of course. And that's why the Hummer EV is 5 bajillion pounds,
well,
right?
Kind of, but that's much later. That's okay. a bit of a different story. But
I mean, that's a newer skirtage of the rules.
Well, the Hummer EV doesn't have any emissions at all, right?
Yeah, so, that's true. But it doesn't have any safety standards as well, I guess.
So for the Big Ten and the Heavy Half, the engines that it came with, they didn't have an EGR valve, they didn't have a smog pump, they didn't have anything. They had this thing called controlled combustion system, which was like a tuning of the carb and the ignition tune. It was like the least amount of effort you could put into emissions.
Like every car has a controlled combustion system, right? Like,
and it had a PCV valve. And on top of all of that, no catalytic converter.
Ooh.
So GM got away with this for like 5 years. Before, in 1980, basically, the EPA was like, you know what? We know what you're doing. We're increasing the gross vehicle weight rating exemption to 8,600 pounds.
Okay.
Which is pretty much where it stayed for a long time. Mm-hmm. That made it, that's where the real heavy-duty trucks were, like the F2, the 2500s, or I guess the C20s and the C25s, C30s, C35s. And GM was like, okay, you got us. They kept the RPO code on the books, so you could still order like a half ton truck with the higher gross vehicle weight rating if you wanted to, but it wasn't its special model anymore. And that stayed on until like the 90s. It was there for a long time. The more important moral of this story, though, is across town in Dearborn, Ford was doing the same thing. They noticed the same regulation change in 75 as well. The F-150 arrived on the scene. Mm-hmm. So these days we think of the F-150 as, you know, the base model Ford light duty pickup truck.
That's right. Yeah.
And it was, and we assumed that it was always like that. But the actual case was Ford's light duty truck before 1975 was called the F-100. And the F-100 it had a lower gross vehicle weight rating. And when the regulations were rewritten, Ford was like, we can make our own heavy half ton. And we'll push it to just at 6,000, and we'll call it the F-150. So it's just a little bit bigger than the F-100.
I see.
Yeah. So they didn't make a big marketing push. They didn't do the same kind of thing that GM and Chevrolet did. But what they did do was keep the F-150 in the lineup forever. Right?
Yeah.
Like,
they didn't. That became the default, I guess.
Yeah.
Right?
The lighter F-100 disappeared in 83. So it was gone.
Interesting.
So that's the genesis of the F-150. The whole model comes from this fake heavy-duty pickup truck scheme that they were running.
That's quite the story. I mean, look, it's not unusual for automakers to find some loophole and exploit it until they get busted, especially when they don't want to change a critical part of the vehicle, be it like emissions or safety standards or something like that, right?
Yeah, exactly.
That's really cool. I really appreciate that story. Where are you going to find this? Where am I going to find this story when it's published?
This is coming into Motor Trend. I'm publishing it with them. I'm not sure when it's going to go live, but I was just fascinated by this research. What kicked this off, Sammy, is because I was online somewhere and I ran across this truck called the Silverado 1500 HD.
Silverado 1500 HD, yeah. And I was which is the combination of like a 1500, which is supposed to be the normal duty truck,
the
standard
truck.
Duty truck. And then you see the HD at the end of it and you're like, is somebody trying to pull a Titan XD on us?
I didn't know this was a real thing, but it was very much a real thing from 2001 to 2006. They built this vehicle. They skipped the 2004 model year for some reason. I don't know why. But this truck's even weirder, Sammy, because at this point...
So it's not just these two back in the 70s. We're talking 2000s now.
This is the 2000s. So emission standards aren't a consideration anymore.
Okay.
It's the rules have changed. Things are different. This truck was very strange. This truck went way beyond what they did in the 70s. So First of all, Chevrolet Silverado, the half ton was not available with a crew cab. You could get like an extended cab, but if you wanted four full size doors, the first 1500 to have that was this 1500 HD. It was in fact the only way you could get it. It was a four door crew cab with a and for 2 or 3 years it was the only version. So four door crew cab with a 6'6" box. It had a 6-liter V8, which was borrowed from the 2500 HD, the actual heavy duty trucks, and you could get it with Quadrasteer, which was the four-wheel active steering system that GM came out with in the early 2000s. So it was like pretty wild.
Weird, yeah.
It was also 1,000 pounds heavier than a regular half-ton truck because it had borrowed a lot of its chassis hardware from the 2500. It had 8-lug hubs. And because it had so much more suspension underneath it, it pushed its GVWR up to 8,600 pounds. So that was if you'll remember, that was the new rating for any vehicle that was going to be claiming itself to be HD. The reason they did this is because it didn't affect emissions, but it did remove this truck from fuel economy standards.
Right.
It was no longer part of CAFE.
Right.
So it was like a way for them to get out from underneath that.
Now, did they have to sell a certain number of these vehicles in order to be exempt from these CAFE standards?
No.
Just offering it is like, yeah, we're out.
And the weird thing is, like, it didn't really tow that much more than a regular a Silverado, like 400 pounds more, pretty much. But it did double the hauling capacity.
That's good.
Yeah.
That's better than nothing, for sure.
So I'm not going to talk too much about the Titan XD.
Why?
Because it was a huge failure. And
But we love it.
It's an example of a vehicle that was poorly thought out. It had a high gross vehicle weight rating, but it was so heavy that it cut into any kind of realistic towing or hauling capacity. It was beaten by like regular half-ton trucks regularly. The Cummins diesel had a lot of problems. It was a big failure for Nissan. There's one more of these trucks that I do want to mention, though, because it's super, it's even weirder than all of the ones we just talked about.
Okay.
This is by far the strangest one. Ford tried to build their own fake HD in the 90s, and they did it because in 97, they did that whole revamp of the F-Series, right? Like, it had been 15 years, or maybe more, actually, since they'd redesigned from top to bottom their best-selling truck.
Okay.
When they came out with the 10th generation truck in 97, they didn't really have a heavy duty version of it. They were working on their Super Duty platform. They were splitting it off from the F series, from the F-150. And they were going to need like a couple more years before that came to market. So the first thing they did was they sold the old body style for like one more year. You could get like a 97 F-250 that was the same body style as the old one.
Okay.
But then what they did was they made something called the light duty F-250, it was an F-150 that had an upgraded rear axle, rear hubs, and suspension setup, and that's it.
So is this just a towing truck then? Like, is that what they're trying to suggest it is?
You don't know the
purpose of this.
It had a 7-lug hub system.
Holy moly, okay.
It's so strange. And it upgraded the GVWR to 7,700 pounds, which is like...
Okay, so it's under that.
It's under the regulatory thing. It's not a real HD. It is a legitimate fake HD truck. And then they kept it on sale for like a long time. Until like, well, not a long time, a few years. At the end of 99, it was done. It overlapped the first wave of the Super Duties. But they, when the Super Duty arrived, Ford was like, we got to keep this going. And so they created something called the 7700 package, which was the exact same thing as the F-250 light duty. You could order it on the F-150.
Yeah, I've seen some of these weird packages that just sound like that when you're doing like a build in price for... F-150s or something like that.
So they sold it until 2003. Like, it's a really long time. This is almost 5 years of this weird fake heavy duty truck.
Weird.
I just don't get this. This is the one that I don't get. Like, it doesn't give them any emissions advantages. It doesn't give them fuel mileage advantages. It's only a marginal upgrade over the F-150. And then it stayed like massively overstayed its welcome. So I don't know. Like, I just don't get it.
That's wild.
It was fun. I had fun writing this because like I was unwrapping an onion, and I kept discovering like new layers of like weird decisions that corporate had made for these trucks.
Right. So that it was basically that GM that tipped you off the first time.
It was seeing that Chevrolet Silverado 1500 HD. And then I think I talked about it with a friend, and they were like, oh yeah, like that's like the F-150 7700. And I'm like, what are you talking about? And then I was down the rabbit hole.
Wild. I love that. I can't wait to read the full story when it's published. I do think it's worth talking about these weird, like, I think that trucks, like, how do I say this properly? The people who use their vehicles for work, like these trucks for work, appreciate a vehicle that has a high capability, especially if they're hauling stuff. You know, you tow with your truck, or you wanted to tow with your truck.
Yeah, but the thing is, like, I think modern half tons are so capable these days that unless you're towing an enormous boat or like horses or something that's extremely heavy, then you can get by with a half ton. Although I will say, having a half ton near its limit is a freaky experience versus driving like a Super Duty that is nowhere near maxing,
which is like overbuilt for the yeah, purpose, it's, right?
You do feel more confident, but you're paying a lot for that confidence.
How interesting. So I always think that it's interesting to see a vehicle that's built for its purpose, and that people can take advantage of it. But these other vehicles that are built to skirt a standard is so useless, right? Like, that's so bizarre.
It's strange.
Cool. What else is going on these days?
I think that's it for me this week. Well, what are you going to be talking about next week?
Next week, I've got the Honda Pilot in my hands, so I'm looking forward to testing that, especially after driving all of the other three rows that we've had recently.
I'm going to be talking about the Hyundai Kona EV. Is that right, Sammy?
Yeah. What are you asking me for?
Because I had so much trouble remembering what it was called at the beginning of the podcast, and I wanted to make sure I got it right.
If you want to stay in touch with us and make sure that you hear our next episode, I suggest you head on over to our website, unnamedautomotivepodcast.com. First of all, that'll allow you to see all of our previous episodes and all the other weird things that we've talked about in the past. But there's also a ton of buttons on the website that allow you to subscribe to our podcast and ensure that you don't miss the next episode. Additionally, I would encourage you to go to our website so that you can stay in touch with us. There's a contact form there. You fill it out and whatever you've got on your mind will land in our inbox, and we will, me and Ben usually chat about it, and we bring it up on the next episode. If you don't want to go through our website, I understand. Yeah, you can go through just your regular email client. Just email us, benjamin@benjaminhunting.com, or you can reach out to us on social media. You can find Ben on Instagram. He's @huntingbenjamin. Or you can find me on the social media network formerly known as Twitter. I think it's called X now. I'm @Sammy_Hat, like you're laughing. Now I'm going to be blunt. I've been trying to like slowly remove myself from Twitter.
I think everyone is. I think that's the way of the world now.
Yeah. So I guess I'll find myself on another social media network. I am also on Instagram, but I haven't done much on that lately. Anyways.
It's almost like you're bringing another life into this world and it somehow takes up a lot of your time.
Yeah. I've got some other projects on the go. Is it fair to call a child a project? I don't know.
I mean, as long as it doesn't hear you.
Or understand.
As long as you're out of earshot of his therapist.
There we go. Anyway, so I'm looking forward to talking to you about those vehicles next week, Ben. And thanks, everyone, for listening. See ya.
Bye.